The views expressed on Skeptically Speaking do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the University of Alberta, the Students' Union, or CJSR.
Like a love long ago lost, you are now Skeptically Speaking, where we ask you to call in and question everything, especially your heart's deepest desires. Here tonight is the keeper of Cupid's car keys, your hostess, Desiree. Skeptically Speaking starts right now. Take it away, Des.
Before we start anything, it's Sean's birthday today. So if anyone wants to phone in and sing happy birthday in a Marilyn Monroe voice, feel free to do so, because watching Sean be embarrassed makes me giggle. Also today on Skeptically Speaking, we were going to be discussing the biological origins of love with Dr. Helen Fisher, but she has double booked herself, and that would be twice, count them twice, for those following along at home. So we have the next best thing, which is apparently Mike Harrison. he has a thing for the genetic roots of love and sex, so we are just going to throw him in. And he is obviously every bit as qualified as a biological anthropologist with a ton of books under her belt. Right? Yeah. Okay, so before we get all mushy, we'll have a few minutes of speaking up. We have with us Marion Kilgore, and she'll be talking about supermarket science.
Thanks, Des. The first thing, though, is that the Society of Edmonton Atheists is holding a Day of Reason blood drive on May 7th at 5:15, and this is in response to the American holiday, which is the U.S. National Day of Prayer, and we decided we would rather actually do something. So, we're donating blood, which is scientifically proven to save lives. Anyone is welcome to join us. There is a Facebook group. You can also contact Desiree or Sean, and they will be happy to send you on to me or one of the other members of the Society of Edmonton Atheists. And we've already got 15 people, and we're hoping to get more, so let us know early so that we can let blood services know we're coming. Anyways, on to supermarkets. So, everybody goes grocery shopping, I assume. We buy food. If you don't, you're shopping at fast food stores, and that's way out of the scope of this. So, the first thing you might notice when you come into the grocery store is all of the stuff that you normally need is on the outside of the store, on the edges, and at the back. So you can't pick up your fruit and then go straight to the milk. You have to weave your way through the rest of the grocery store. And like many things in supermarket marketing, this is intended to keep you in the store longer, because studies have shown that for every minute someone spends in a grocery store, they spend another $2.
Really?
Yes. So
does that have anything to do with why they have those little coffee shops and things in the grocery stores now?
Those are similar. The idea with those is that you come in, you're just intending to get a coffee, and you end up, you know, going, oh, I could use some fresh bread or fruit or something like that. And so then you're in the store longer because you go looking for groceries instead of just the coffee or just your checking account. So another thing that they will do is some groceries, like cereals and that sort of thing, they come in a fairly standard-sized box, will occasionally reduce the weight inside the box and not change any of the packaging. So you might actually be buying less than you did before for the same price. So
I've heard they actually do that with chocolate bars and things, as well as sugar prices change. They'll up and lower and increase the grams of the chocolate bar, but always keep the boxes the same size. So
right.
In good times and bad times, sometimes it works in your favor. Sometimes you do go to the store and get more than last time, but then six months later, it might be less again.
Yeah, and then it gives them the opportunity to go, now 10% larger, where really it's the same size it was before, but now they can jack up the price a little bit.
Has there been a study done? I'm thinking periodically taking, for example, a certain cereal and weighing it to see how much is actually in there every time?
I don't know about cereal, but I do know that a few years ago, I think it was either Coke or Pepsi, I can't remember which, was found to be underfilling their bottles and by about 5% or something like that, which added up to a lot of money for them. And so the result of that was that they were forced to slightly overfill their bottles for about the same length of time.
Really? That was the repercussion?
Yeah.
They have to over... Wow. Okay.
To sort of even it out for
no,
them.
No, that makes sense. So all the initial people got screwed and all the people after got extra. Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
And
justice.
And something to keep in mind, it's not that they're quote-unquote secretly changing the volume and you're none the wiser. Technically, in the fine print in the corner where it says how many grams... or whatever the volume unit is for that item, they do change what's printed on there to reflect what they're putting in. It's just, as a consumer, you don't always think, well, the last time I bought it, it had 563 grams, and this time it has 552.
Well, that's right. In the Coke situation, they were actually not filling it to the volume they said on the container. But in most cases, they will just change the little weight or volume in the corner, which is... sneaky, but legal.
All right.
And so another thing is choice. Giving people lots of choices, which is a big thing nowadays. And everybody's like, choice is good. I can go and I can choose from 20 types of salad dressing. And it must make my life better and more satisfying. But there have been more than one study that show that the more choices people have, the less content they are with what they actually end up with. If you have three different types of cereal, you can pretty easily decide which of the three you like best. But if you have 10 different types of cereal, do I want it sweeter? Do I want it to stay crunchy when I pour milk on it? There's all these different types of choices, and you can't handle that many variables in a reasonable amount of grocery store time. Which is one of the other ways they keep you there longer, because you're trying to decide on the cereal.
So the whole thing is built, the whole supermarket is built just to keep you there longer.
Pretty much. And to get you to buy more expensive things. The brand names and the generally more expensive items are at eye level, so that when you're just walking by, you'll see that thing and you go, oh, I could use that, so you grab it. And hopefully don't look for like the store brand discount one shelf down.
Which is actually, I know this, there was a study done that a lot of the brand names like Kraft and such, they will also have generic products that won't have the Kraft label on it, but it's made in the same factory with the same ingredients, but with different packaging.
Right.
Brutal.
There are some cases where store brands are not the same nutritional value as the brand name. Condensed soups is the most recent example I've run across. They are way saltier if you buy the cheap ones. But there was one study where they offered people 24 options of jam. You can taste any of these 24 jams. And, you know, and then they did another one where they could taste 6 samples of jam. And they found that the people who were given the large sample size were more likely to go, oh, I'll think about it and walk away and not buy anything, because there's too many choices. You don't know what you want. And then the 6 people who get given, you know, 6 samples or fewer samples would go, oh, I really like this one, and grab it. So.
Choice is bad.
Well, choice has its place. So another thing that is becoming slightly more common, but you probably won't see at the local Safeway anytime soon, is, well, the ambience of the thing. So you know you have music in grocery stores and that sort of thing. That's been around for a while. But they're starting to get a little bit more into things like scents and the interior decorating of the store, like wooden floors to make it feel more pleasant to be there and calmer lighting. But on the scent side, they did a study and found that shoppers would stay longer in a hardware store if they sprayed the scent of freshly cut grass in the hardware store. And so, grocery stores have been doing this already with fresh bakeries. You smell the bread, it's pleasant, you linger a little while, spend your $2 a minute.
So there was an actual study that showed that the time people stayed in the store was actually lengthened with the use of scent.
Yes.
God, humans are really gullible. We are so easy to manipulate, it's frightening.
Yeah. And, well, with the brand names, people frequently underrate how influenced they are by brands. They'll say, oh, no, I always look for the cheapest one. But when a push comes to shove and you're in a rush or you're just cranky and you don't want to look around, people will buy the brands that they're familiar with.
I have no optimism left.
You're, yeah, but, well, whatever.
But, sorry.
Do you have any notes there in regards to the direction that the stores are laid out in, as in...
Just so everybody knows. Okay, Sean, you have to talk about your phone for a moment.
I don't know what you're talking about. Well, you know what? I just wanted to get a little more high-tech feeling, you know, that I'm in the future and I've put on a new sound set on the phone, so it
what is the sound, Sean?
Yeah, douche hell.
I think our listeners, the geekiest of them, will determine this one for themselves. I think they will recognize the signature beeps and bloops of the USS Enterprise 1701D. I've said enough.
Oh, I'm just waiting for him to get the voice of the computer.
Oh, I want Hal on mine.
Hal would be good.
Yeah.
Goodness.
So back to orientation.
Back to supermarkets.
And I can't remember which way it is. There's one direction that most people feel the most comfortable moving in, whether it's counterclockwise or clockwise around the perimeter of a store. And I know that a lot of places are designed to make you actually walk in the opposite of what you're comfortable in. And it kind of throws you off your element a little bit in some sort of deep psychological way to somehow manipulate you into buying more things. So if it was clockwise that we all feel more natural circling an area, they make us go counter, and it kind of throws us off our plan when we go in, I guess, is the way to...
I don't know. I didn't hear that. But, well, when you think about it, most grocery stores, you walk in, you go a little bit to the right, and then you go around. And they put all the expensive stuff in the middle aisles that you have to go past, or on the ends, where they do these huge displays, and, you know, you think, oh, those chips are on sale, because they have a huge sign. And they're really not. They're just on the end to sell more, because you see them when you walk past to get your milk.
This is actually depressing me. grocery shopping is actually... This is a relaxing activity for me.
Think of it like a challenge.
This is why I've reverted to just eating out most of the time.
Oh, because that's a better financial decision.
Well, it's not, but it's somehow less manipulative.
Well, they do have nowadays, which I think is a good sign, a lot of stores have unit pricing on things now. So you look at the sign and it says yogurt is whatever, $3. And then in the corner, it will generally have a price either per 100 grams, per kilogram, per milliliter, depending on what the product is. So you can actually look and say, is this larger box of Triscuits actually a better price than the smaller box? Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
But that
takes effort.
No. I like that a lot better because I am being honest, people. I used to walk around with a calculator when I went grocery shopping because I wanted to know that kind of information.
Well, I've definitely busted out the phone, yes. No, I definitely feel more...
Kind of a nerd, yeah.
For more loyalty to the stores that have that. Sorry, it's my birthday and people are trying to call me and now it's on vibrate, everyone. But no, I actually get annoyed sometimes when, especially when you have the confusing sales where it's like $3, $4, $6.99, but then it doesn't really say the other price anywhere at all, and then it gets really hard to calculate.
That's why you carry the calculator now that you have calculators on your cell phones.
You don't have to do that because it even shows you the price per unit before and after the sale.
You know, I think we should be forcing people to do a little bit of work.
To save themselves money.
Yes.
You should put some effort into it.
But when you put it that way, it doesn't sound as good.
I think if the store is going to do the work for me, I'm going to just make them my shopping option as a reward for their...
When I worked at Superstore, admittedly, I was in the garden center, not so much in produce or anything, but it got quite confusing even when we had to put up signs. It's like, okay, 3 for this price. Do they have to buy the 3? Do they not have to buy the 3? We'd sit there and stare at the sign and go, okay, it's this kind of sign.
Yeah, the one store, they definitely, it's per unit. They advertise it as 3 as, but, or whatever, and you can only get one. You can get 1 or 2 or 5, and it doesn't matter. But some of them, yeah. My least favorite, without using names here, is the one where if you buy 1, it's the most expensive. And if you buy between 2 and 7, you get the deal. But if you buy 8, it's like...
even more than
the
first one.
You're either not allowed to buy them, or it's even more than the 1. There's one store I particularly don't like going to because they do that as a regular... Like, I don't even see regular prices in that store.
I almost think about that as, D&D for grocery shopping, though. It's like saving throws.
It's a puzzle.
I love it. I'm sorry. I like to make everything fun.
Well, another thing is bulk, because everybody, you hear a lot, buy things in bulk, they're cheaper, and generally they are, but only if you intend to use them all. So, if you buy a huge bag of onions, probably cheaper than buying two or three, but not if, you know, 90% of them go mushy before you get around to actually using them.
I'm a sucker for that one, actually. I am. Only with produce.
I've done it myself a couple times, where you look in the bottom of your fridge and you go, oh, should not have bought those tomatoes.
When I only needed one.
Yeah.
Instead, I bought 40 because they were cheaper.
My new strategy, mostly because it's convenience, I live behind a grocery store now, is I refuse to actually buy vegetables or fruits unless I'm actually planning to eat them, other than like the staples, bananas or apples or something. They will go bad if I buy them without the intention of cooking them right then. So I just like pick two or three tomatoes up, whatever I think I need, and they get used then. Otherwise, they will go bad. And
yes.
But, you know, like, it doesn't work so well unless the grocery store is outside of your door. So,
yeah.
Well, that was a lot about grocery shopping and not so much about love. I mean, unless we're going to talk about finding the right type of girl or guy for you in the grocery store, maybe we should move on to the night's main attraction.
Wow, here. That was like the worst segue ever.
I sounded
better than no segue.
Okay, thanks, Marion, very much for being here.
Thanks,
no
Marion.
And if you want to appear on Speaking Up, do send off an email to feedback@skepticallyspeaking.com. And again, you don't have to be a local. You can be anywhere in the world.
We'll Skype
email
in,
us.
Yeah.
Yep. So Mike's here with us now. Thanks, Mike, for being so willing to come on the show and talk about this with no notice whatsoever.
That's all right. I know this stuff like the back of my hand.
I'm pretty sure Mike, actually, every single week, he has all of our topics researched just in case the call comes in.
That's actually what he does.
Yeah, that's true.
Talking off the cuff there. But
This is why we post the week ahead, because we have some keeners. And I approve.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, actually, that whole dating in the shopping mall thing, they do that in some places in Europe. You'll have, like, different colored baskets, and, like, one basket might mean you're single, another one might mean you're sort of single.
Shut up.
Yeah.
No, really?
Yeah, no.
And then there's those who are single but don't want people to think they're single, so they're going to grab the other basket, and this gets quite confusing quite quickly.
Yeah, it could. You could have, like, little... You know,
I wonder how well that works.
Actually, from the stuff I read, it works really well. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
All right. I can think of worse ways to meet, really. So, listeners, we're going to do something interesting on the show. Since we found out very late that Dr. Fisher wouldn't be available this evening, what we're going to do is, while we discuss the biological roots of romantic love, we're also going to give you, the listener, the opportunity to meet your true love. So we're turning this into a Lonely Skeptics Club. If you are single and would like to meet a nerdy girl and or a guy, please do call in. Or email in. Tell us a little bit about yourself. If it's an email, we'll read it on air. And then anybody else, if you happen to hear their bios and you find them interesting, please do email or call in, and we will hook you up. We have no idea how this is going to work out, so...
We're hoping both males and females
yes,
participate so that we actually have some matching to potentially do.
I know in the skeptics community we have, like, what, three women? But honestly, we need more. So, girls, if you are looking for a nerdy boy, this is your opportunity, because they're all listening. Great. So the number is 492-2577, extension 1. You can also email feedback@skepticallyspeaking.com or on Twitter @skepticalradio. So, Mike, how are our brains different when we're in love than when we're not?
Well, there's a couple different things. Like, I'm effectively Dr. Fisher for the purposes of this conversation, so I kind of took her work and looked at it as best I can. There's a couple different things that go on in the brain. There's basically three processes that Dr. Fisher talked about.
There's hand signals going on here.
I basically try to gesture Mike. I'll not do it so subtly.
Don't just eat the mic.
To bounce back and forth.
Okay, so that's bad.
Not so much closer or further. I can adjust. It's just when you bounce, I'm quickly grabbing the dowels and.
One day, I'm honestly going to webcam this. Because I think that would really add to our show. Me slapping Mike. He's to my right, if that helps at all.
I strategically position myself
the possibilities
on the other side with a laptop in the middle as sort of a wall for this exact reason. And I have all the little paper note thingies that I can throw over as ammunition. She has nothing.
I have nothing. I have a pen.
I am now worried.
Okay. Again. How are our brains different when we're in love as opposed to when we're not in love?
Well, I kind of have to preamble that. There's basically three chemical pathways that people talk about when they're talking about the neurochemical effects of being in love. That's because there's basically considered to be three different types of love. That's lust, which I think we know what that is. There's attraction, which is romantic or passionate love. It's more of an intellectual process. It's that, I wonder when they're going to call kind of feeling, or I suppose the reverse. And there's attachment, which is a long-term sort of peaceful, comfortable sort of feeling. And there's different pathways for each one of these, and they all basically deal with entirely separate neurotransmitters. So, of course, there's some overlap. So you'll see in the brains of people that are in love, you will see mostly there's the sex hormones play a big role in the initiation of the sex process, and there's definitely a lot of evidence to suggest that people pick sexual partners based upon their identification of how close they are to their genome. They can get that from smell and other things, but basically it has to do with testosterone and estrogen. After they get into something or they've been around in each other for a while, other types of chemicals begin to become active. That's in the attraction phase. You'll see things like high dopamine and norepinephrine and low serotonin.
And what does dopamine do again?
Dopamine is, we don't understand everything about what these neurochemical transmitters do, but dopamine is, if I could put it really succinctly, it's kind of a learning process. It's very much involved in forming new pathways, so we can form new behaviors and add more information. Basically, that's what dopamine seems to do. It also has other effects, but that's basically what we surmise. Serotonin, on the other hand, is almost an inhibitor, almost a general inhibitor. So serotonin begins to kick in at the end of the romantic love phase when people are no longer thinking obsessively about each other. Serotonin levels begin to rise, and that's actually a sign of moving from the romantic love stage into the more companion love phase. So there's distinct chemical phases, and you can see them. And it always corresponds to people's behavior. People with higher levels of the sex hormones will tend to be more interested in having sex. And people that maintain those high levels, and most importantly, like the hormonal rhythm, many years into their relationship, will continue to have the erotic component to their relationship being more active comparatively to people that don't have that same kind of activity.
And can you be in multiple stages at the same time?
Well, yes. I mean, there's three different dimensions, right? So you can, you could, for example, have very high attraction, but very low attachment. We do see that in when we look for these things in animals, because we find that a lot of the same behavioral drives and neurotransmitters are present in animals. We'll see that animals that have a high rate of infidelity will have higher levels of oxytocin and vasopressin, right? Which are, we'll also see those in humans at the same time. So, all right.
Okay. And then that, you'll have to redirect me on that one because I kind of got.
For the record, I'm throwing Mike off. He's not used to the hand signals. Des and we can do the multitasking, but.
Mike has to stop everything and figure out what does that mean.
I actually only have the one hand signal, but it keeps getting reinterpreted, or I just change it ever so slightly.
Okay, so is there a different biological basis for romantic love as there is for non-romantic love? I'm thinking, you know, maternal love or you know, friendship love.
There definitely seems to be. I mean, because they're different neurochemical transmitters, everyone has a certain, I guess, natural inclination or natural ability to basically create these. There's also evidence that things like the sex hormones, androgens and estrogens, will influence how they're absorbed in the brain and such and such. So people will have different capacities for these, and in between people, these could vary quite a lot. And it actually, you know, going back to the infidelity thing, they do find that finding ways to increase levels of oxytocin and vasopressin does make people less prone to infidelity, or at least in research so far. So, yeah.
People have different levels. So basically putting people on antidepressants?
Not really antidepressants. They have... The effects that they have in the brain are more complicated than that, and I don't fully understand them. But from what the research says, the oxytocin is this; it creates this kind of warm, cuddly, like oh, you know, want to hug type feeling. And vasopressin is similar, subtly similar, but yeah.
Okay. Oh well. one of the things that in my show prep for my interview with Dr. Helen Fisher, one of the things that she mentioned was that romantic love is actually not really an emotion at all. It's more similar to an addiction neurologically.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. So like going back through the three, I mean, romantic love, attraction, is basically characterized by mood swings, focused attention, obsessive thinking, and intense craving for the individual. It's driven by that high dopamine, norepinephrine type response. And dopamine tends to go in waves. Basically, it's we'll see a lot of dopamine when we're doing something we really like, but then it'll fall off very quickly. And we'll also see dopamine levels acclimatizing to any particular activity. So the next time we do the same thing in the same way, we'll get a similar dopamine rush, but not quite what we had before. So it's very much like an addiction.
Well, that's awkward.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Actually, you sent me a link a couple of days ago about, I think it was about how, something about your first love and how the best thing to do to, because I guess physiologically you never quite get over your first love. And so your brain and your body is constantly trying to attain that same level of passion and excitement as with your first relationship. And the wits that are the sociologists that were talking about this article were saying that the best way to get over this is to never have a first relationship.
Yeah, great advice.
Which is great.
Great advice.
Great.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. But how does that fit?
It's very much the same thing. I mean, we see the acclimatization reaction happen all over psychology. You know, people just get used to things, and the first time is usually the best for most things. I mean, most people are familiar with that effect. That's more of a psychological thing from my understanding. Again, I'm not a psychologist, but
That's very similar to, for example, drug use.
Yeah.
Is that you're always trying to get the level of that first high.
Yeah, which would make sense. I mean, if that sort of establishes the baseline, mm-hmm. and you just have nothing to compare it to, you know, you would elevate that.
Well, that's hideous, actually.
It is, really, yeah.
So isn't that just very inconvenient for all of us that this is the way that we are set up?
Well, unless we happen to meet the person that we want to marry as the first person that we meet and have a relationship with, and that never goes wrong, it could be kind of inconvenient, yeah.
And on that note, do phone 492-2577, extension 1. Meet your future addiction here on Skeptically Speaking. So I can't help but think, since it's just inconvenient and awkward and and poorly set up in many ways. Why do we need it at all? Like, evolutionarily, why is romantic love important?
Well, it's hard to really, I mean, you can always make the evolutionary argument, you know, kind of post-mortem. But it makes sense that you would develop things like the attachment scenario so that people could raise young together, right? Like, that's important because, you know, we stay immature for, you know, a very long time, seemingly longer every year. The attraction phase, there was an evolutionary argument that I saw for that one. Basically, that was supposed to keep people, you know, they speculate that was supposed to keep us committed long enough that we could
raise babies.
Well, no, create babies, actually, at that point.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, lifespan obviously isn't what it was while we were evolving. So I would assume the whole problem of the, you know, getting off the addiction, the feeling of love going away, you might not really live long enough to have that concern back, you know, back in the old days.
So that's true. For the record, they say basically that the emotional roller coaster is supposed to stop. Like, the attraction phase can last on average about 15 months. After that, it begins to slowly decline, and for most people, it is at rock bottom at about 10 years.
Rock bottom, hey?
Yeah, well, as low as it's gonna go, yeah. Yeah. Or basically the null state. Yeah, yeah.
Aren't we a cheery bunch here?
Yeah.
Now, again, 492-2577 extension 1. If you want to talk about love, if you have read an interesting study on love and or sex in the last little while, please do call. We are interested. But also, if you want a boyfriend or girlfriend, a skeptical boyfriend or girlfriend, do call in. Again, you can also email feedback@skepticallyspeaking.com.
Plus, you know, some of us in the studio are single, and it's their birthday, and
Are you marketing Sean single?
I would never do that. That's a conflict of interest, Desiree.
Right.
A conflict of interest.
You're right. It's a good point.
And I think we do have a caller, our first skeptical love connection, perhaps, or maybe not. It's Nathan. We'll see what happens here. Nathan, are you there?
Hello. Well, my name is Nathan. I'm single, and I cherish my friendships, and I'm looking for a skeptical woman.
And what are you seeking in a skeptical woman? Is skeptical good enough? Or?
One that does not buy into the woo, of course.
Okay.
And someone who is also open and very cheerful.
Cheerful. A cheerful skeptic. Okay, I'll keep my eye out. All right. Ladies, that is our biggest fanboy, Nathan. He shows commitment to the cause repeatedly. If you want a piece of that, please do send us an email.
Any ladies who like a long walk along the skeptical beach of life, this is your man.
That was beautiful.
Oh, yeah, and other people should definitely call in. You don't always have to wait for me.
I think you've set the trend,
actually. You've just inspired one right now, Nathan. So we will keep your information, and we have our first lady on the line, it seems. Maybe we'll even keep you on the line, Nathan, just to see what happens here.
Okay.
Hi, are you there, Heather?
It's only Heather. Nathan's not interested. Don't worry about it.
Okay. Well, we'll say goodbye to Nathan then.
Okay.
Well, I'm just going to go feel dejected.
Okay.
No,
it's you who rejects Heather.
It's not,
I think.
You, it's me.
Oh, I've heard that before.
Oh, we love the Heather. Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay,
thanks,
see you, Nathan.
Actually, darn, he should have stayed on. I have two questions for you skeptics.
Oh, well, oops.
Of which I am not one because I am a Islamic Scientologist.
Right, right. If everyone will remember Heather's rather sudden departure from the show to focus on her her growing enthusiasm for Islamic Scientology. Is it Islamic Scientology, or it was more Islam or Scientology, and you were just trying out both?
The former. I melded them.
Oh, good, good.
In an unholy marriage of religion.
I like that. Good.
Mm-hmm, yeah, you know, more bang for your buck, as it were, which is appropriate for today's show.
Uh-huh.
Two questions.
Giggity, giggity.
Whomever wants to tackle them. One, do you skeptics find relationships more difficult since you have such a skeptical brain? Do you find you nitpick things more or call people on their stuff more?
Yes. That's
quick and direct.
Do we have
control in this room? I'm not sure. That does happen.
I don't know. Maybe initially when you're establishing your parameters for who you find interesting or who you might want to pursue a relationship with, you might be weighing in more factors early on just about background and belief. But, you know, I think that might be true no matter if you're a skeptic or not. I think everyone does that to a degree. You know, do your interests align? Are you kind of on the same page?
But when you're so focused, and as skeptics, most of us are fairly focused on using critical analysis in every aspect of our lives. And you're right, that occasionally
learned, that
has some downfalls.
Yeah, including grocery shopping, as we've learned earlier days, right?
I liked my calculator. Nothing wrong with that.
Do you bust out the calculator on the first date, measuring the different...
Where are you going with this?
Wow, I should have really finished that sentence, shouldn't I?
What is your second question, Heather?
Moving on.
My second question is, metric or imperial, Des? No, my second question is...
It's bigger.
Oh, awful.
My second question is, and this was based on what Nathan just said when he ended his call, if you met someone who... everything else was perfect and brilliant and well-suited, but they were a bit of a woo, or heck, a total woo, how willing would you be to put up with that? All of you have to answer now.
Zero.
Zero? You could put up with no woo?
For the record, before he's at zero, he was madly punching in numbers. It's an interesting trend around here.
I
feel lost without my calculator.
Sean?
I don't know. I think it comes down to the person's their overall personality.
Well,
in the end. I know all things equal,
but everything's perfect. Don't segue.
Well, it would come down to, I mean, it's like having friends in the world who believe in woo. If it's going to be something that they always want to bring up and talk about, and they know it's going to drive you crazy, and it's going to be a deal breaker, then it's going to be the deal breaker. If you kind of have that mutual respect where maybe you don't talk about your skeptical stuff so much, if they don't talk about the woo and you have other interests that keep things interesting, then I think that's okay. But I mean, if it's an important part of your life and you're not going to be able to both shut up about your conflicting interests, then it probably won't work out. I think there's the possibility for it.
Thank you. Des?
You know what? I was going to talk about this a little later in the show, but I'll bring it up now. Dr. Fisher was contracted to be the, I believe her title is the scientific advisor for chemistry.com. And this does have a point. Bear with me. So in preparation for the show, I was, you know, looking around for information about her, and I went on to chemistry.com and I signed up. Now, I have a profile on there. I wanted to take the test. And Mike told me later that apparently I didn't have to sign up in order to take the test, but who knew? So one of my matches, actually, he sounded lovely. Lovely man. And then far down on the side, it talks about how he found the movie The Secret really resonated with him, and I immediately discarded that profile. So, although the rest of his profile did sound wonderful, immediately discarded. Now, whether it was easier because it was online and I've never met this person, I don't know them from a hole in the ground, maybe, but I can honestly say I suffer fools poorly. So, and I know that sounds harsh, but there are certain things that I just, you know, I can't date a Christian. I know that. That would be too much for me. Even ex-Christians sometimes are hard, but I've been contaminated by that point. But I'm sorry. I'm being harsh. But no, there's certain things that, like, there's so many other relationship issues why allow something that you know is going to be a problem in, even initially?
Mike?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, you know, like, everything goes well until that point where they're like, I'm just going to give you some of my energy.
That might have been a euphemism, Mike.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe that's the type of energy you want to be receiving.
Maybe.
I don't know. Maybe you didn't let it go far enough.
It's not like I don't ask for clarification. I'm pretty open to these things. But no, yeah, when they start realigning the chakras, it makes it very difficult. When they tell me they can, read my mind or anything, it makes it difficult also. That's basically my answer.
And we do have an answer from Nathan, because he's fast on the Twitter there. It's very short and sweet, as Twitter often is. Depends on the amount of hardship that the woo entails.
What does that mean, Nathan? Twitter again.
Okay, we will update everyone once that answer comes in. I'm sure
he's
typing away.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Heather.
Bye. Thanks, Heather. We also have a clarification. Paul from the SEA said, hi, all. I have a slight correction to Marion's announcement of the blood drive. She mentioned that we had 15 confirmed. Since your producer is such a rock star, we're now up to 16. Many thanks and a happy birthday to Sean. And he's actually the president of the SEA.
Yes, thanks for emailing with the up-to-date information there, Paul.
And Heather just walked in the studio. Apparently, Heather was still here, and she was in the other room. Lovely. So, you know what? I actually want to talk more about that chemistry.com stuff, because I guess the basis for chemistry.com was Dr. Fisher's breaking of personalities down into four major types. Actually, in her latest book, The Why Him, Why Her? Finding Real Love by Understanding Your Personality Type, she breaks people initially down into four major types, and this sounds very Cosmo to me, honestly. And I can say I've never read Cosmo in my life, but it sounds like something that would be in there. So, Mike, what's the scientific basis for this?
Well, she's looking at behavior and breaking it down. It's just as a side note, it's very similar to the Myers-Briggs test, which has been around for quite a while and sort of considered the informal standard, these kinds of things. There's all kinds of ways of breaking people up into different personality groups. It's just kind of, it's not clear how many there should be. It seems like some people do have different personalities, but everything's on a continuum. You know, there's no hard lines. But basically, her system boils down to four groups: explorers, builders, negotiators, and directors. And each one of them, she more or less links exclusively to one of the neurotransmitters. So explorers are dopamine, because it's primarily associated with learning and acquiring new skills. So anyone that's pretty much into new experience and, you know, very much looking for to expand the realm of knowledge is it's reasonable to classify them as an explorer type and say that they probably have a lot of dopamine activity. You'd probably find that to be true. So that makes sense. Yeah. Similar thing for builders. Serotonin is the active neurochemical there. Serotonin is another one of the ones that it's kind of hard to understand. It's somewhat an inhibitor. It seems like serotonin helps us, I think I talked about this before, helps us cut off continuous lines of thought and obsessive thinking, that kinds of things. So builders tend to be very like goal-directed and sort of compound in their thinking. I guess compound. Yeah, straightforward thinkers, something like that. Then you would have negotiators, which are basically estrogen-based, or estrogen is the primary neurotransmitter. And this makes sense. I mean, in Fisher's supporting work, she says that they tend to be people that are verbally skilled, good at reading people's faces, posture, gestures, tone of voice, contextual thinkers, compassionate, nurturing, imaginative, agreeable. Makes sense, because we see that in various studies. We see that people that have higher levels of social intuition tend to have slightly higher levels of estrogen. So this does make sense. Lastly, directors, linked to testosterone. Maybe it's a bit obvious, but basically, people that have higher levels of testosterone are thought to be more aggressive, focused, outwardly competitive, analytical, logical, and
good with rule-based systems and that kind of thing. So it does make sense. It kind of builds on many of these systems that have been developed before. I guess the main difference is that she really draws it out in relation to these four neurotransmitters and basically ties everything to them and to their particular dominance in a given brain.
Okay, well, when I took the test on chemistry.com, it turns out I was an explorer slash negotiator, which is, I guess, that I'm mostly an explorer and secondarily a negotiator. I'm sorry, I don't know how much stock I put in this, and I understand, you know, linking this with certain chemicals inherent, but, you know, the Myers-Briggs test, I still can't figure out if I consider that cold reading or not, because all of these things could apply to most people at some time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly the problem. As most people, even if they take the Myers-Briggs test, which is, you know, has been used for a long time, is pretty much considered the gold standard of these sorts of things, people will get different results on different days. And everything is very subjective. And, you know, this is one of the main problems with psychology that, you know, there are whole different branches of psychology that try to address this issue, is that people think differently moment to moment, situation to situation. It's not that they necessarily have a consistent personality that follows them around everywhere. They're very reactive.
Well, that being said, the test was very interesting. And actually, before I get to that, 492-2577 extension 1 or feedback@skepticallyspeaking.com. So one of the things that was interesting about the test was, you know, as in most kind of personality tests, they had sort of the value questions and the what do you want from a relationship questions and such and such. But this one actually had, you know, spatial judgment questions. It asked, you know, comparing your ring finger to your index finger and which one was longer. It had a question about the kind of doodles that you do when you're bored. Mm-hmm. So where do those kind of things come from?
Well, the spatial thing, testosterone is linked to spatial processing capability. That's just a way of measuring basically how much testosterone you're likely to have active in your brain. The ring finger thing, I'm not quite sure about that one. It probably comes
that
out.
That had something to do with testosterone in utero. There's a certain time when you, if your ring finger is longer, it means there was a testosterone burst boost at some point while you were. That's all I know. Got nothing.
Yeah. No, that's,
all right.
That's
how about the doodles?
I remember learning this in school, but that's about as much as I'm getting as well.
We've been out of school too long.
We have been, yeah.
But what's with the doodles?
I don't know. But I do
if
know.
If anyone knows, call in. 492-2577 extension 1.
In relation to doodles, I read this really cool thing where they were talking about if you doodle in class or, you know, wherever you're listening to someone talk, it actually does help you remember. People will basically tie their memory to the little sketches, and yeah, it works. It's quite interesting.
Interesting. We're going to take a quick little break here for a second. I was going to play the contact promo, but Desiree has been saying the phone number a lot. So all of you skeptical ladies and gentlemen out there who are looking to meet your special skeptical somebody, please call 492-CJSR during our break. We will see you in a few minutes, everyone. And I was too busy talking
voice?
In the it's the rom- like- it's the love show. I'm being cheesy. I don't know.
I kind of felt dirty there. Not in a good way.
There we go. Well, we'll have a couple minutes here while this
we'll have a couple minutes, yeah.
this is from the skip. I should premise this a little bit.
Yes.
We do have a project in the works. It's the Skeptographers podcast. It's a community-driven project where everyone has been helping to contribute it, and we're to it, and we're going to be opening it to the world soon with the launch of the podcast. This is a quick sample. It is, I can't remember what. Well, I'll find out. It's very self-introducing here.
Credit reports and credit scores are sometimes viewed as black magic. You put information in, interest rates come out. But there are some parts of the process that the average person should understand. Your credit score is a number that credit reporting agencies come up with to decide how likely you are to be a problem customer. It's based on the types and amount of credit you have, credit you use, how long you've had the credit, and how good you are with payments. A credit report is all the agency's information about you. Names, birthdate, addresses, past addresses, credit cards you have, loans, and that sort of thing. There are three different credit reporting agencies in Canada, and you can get a free report from all of them. Since these are what your credit scores are based on, it is in your best interest to ensure that they're correct and that there isn't any fraudulent activity on any of them. Myth number one. When I request a copy of my credit report, it will affect my score. Not so. All the major credit reporting agencies are unanimous on this one. When you check your report by requesting it from the agency, this is a soft pull and doesn't affect your score. If your bank checks your report before issuing a line of credit, or you ask a car dealership to check your report for you, this is considered a hard pull and will affect your score. Myth 2. Shopping around for a car loan will have a huge impact on my score. This one depends on how you go about it. Inquiries for credit cards are all treated individually, and each affects your score. Mortgages or car loans, on the other hand, are treated as one inquiry if they're all done within a 14-day period. Essentially, the credit guys have decided that shopping around for a loan doesn't predict whether or not you'll pay it off, and so doesn't mean much more to your score. Myth number three, a higher salary will boost your score. No, it won't. This information doesn't appear on your credit reports to lenders, and doesn't affect your score. It does affect how much credit you can get from lenders, but that's a separate issue. So, keep an eye on your reports, and remember to pay your bills on time.
And we're back, everybody. That was a little talk on interest rates, obviously. That was Marion. You might remember her from a little segment about 20 minutes ago.
In case you have a short attention span, that is the same person.
Or in case you just joined us.
This is true.
Happen, yeah.
This is true. We do have a caller. I just want to give the phone number again, because I believe you have 8 minutes in which you can meet your true love, people. Like, you are wasting this opportunity. 492-2577 extension 1.
All right. Hi, Jamie.
Hello. So basically, I just heard you guys talking about that chemistry.com, and they're using digit ratio, which is actually pretty interesting because, like, I'm kind of a psych major, so I kind of, like, cruise those sites just to see what they use.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never heard anybody using digit ratio, but they actually do. One of the psych professors, he does digit ratio testing, and he actually used it on the... what's their hockey team called? Not the Oilers, but the U of A, whatever they are. The Bears, is it?
I love that no one in this room has any idea.
It's a bunch
it's
of
so platypus. Bad.
Pandas or bears, it would be.
Yeah, one of those. Like, it's so bad because apparently they're a really good team. But yeah, he did a study on them, and I guess they tested aggression or something, and he did it with the digit ratio. And I believe, like, he has posters, so I believe he's actually been able to provide some corresponding information that they do relate to aggression.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's kind of really cool because that's, like, to actually look into that. Obviously, this person who created the website or who's doing these studies, they kind of do know what research is going on, and they're trying to apply it all. And
well, this
yeah.
is the thing. Helen Fisher is supposed to, you know, she is. I shouldn't say supposed to be. I'm just bitter. She is the, you know, foremost expert on romantic love, and she's done so much research on this. But I can't help but think it still sounds sketchy in a lot of ways.
Well, it's like you guys are saying, there's so much, like, personality, like, and with Myers-Briggs, the same thing, it can change. But you know, it's an industry, and people want to find romance and want as much information, their own information, and the others provided and analyzed, you know, so we don't have to do the work.
Absolutely.
And if you're having one that tests for aggression, or testosterone, as I guess she will say, that's something that, you know, somebody will probably want to look into. It's more than other ones websites have provided, which, honestly, after I heard that, I actually want to go to the website to see what it's like.
Because You should. Yeah, it costs money. Keep that in mind.
Oh, God. I just want to go and try the test.
Well, there's a free sample or whatever, right?
You can do the test without purchasing it, but
yeah,
apparently
that is what
I would Google it.
Well,
because
found
it.
Yeah, I'll just jump in here as well. Helen Fisher's book, Why Him, Why Her, I got through part of it in in researching the show. My co-host here had stolen it for most of the weeks leading up, and I got it back last minute. But she actually, you know, in her discussion in the book, she actually talks a lot about the science that went into chemistry.com, and she does include a sample of her test. I don't know if it's the one they're still using today, but it's essentially the same. So go to your local library, pick up the book, and another chance to do the test in there. So
it seems like she's using a lot more science and kind of the science that's being used now, rather than like something like, I don't know, like eHarmony. Is that the one that uses a really expanded test?
The really, really long test,
yeah,
on eHarmony,
like,
yeah.
Like, that one's just crazy. It's not interesting. It doesn't.
No.
And that one, I feel it would change day by day. But, you know, something like what she seems to be doing is trying to use more concrete science, I say in quotation, something that's more, your digit ratio won't change.
And exactly.
And so you can kind of like correlate some signs to this and say, well, this person, I never read the paper he did, but I'm assuming, like you're saying, it deals, this person's more, has a tendency to be more aggressive. Now, what that means, like these were sports athletes, hockey athletes, right?
Right.
So you want them to be in some respect more aggressive. How this relates to the personal life, I have no idea, but at least you know if they play hockey or something, they'll be aggressive.
For sure. Well, we appreciate the call. We actually have two other calls that have just queued up here.
I love that you people wait until 4 minutes before the end of the show.
They love to. They must be all the ones who cram for the tests. Yes.
Or a girl called. Thank you, Jamie.
No problem.
Appreciate it.
Have a great night. Bye.
All right. We'll get James here. He's from Edmonton. Hello, James.
Hi.
Hey there.
I'm well, and you? Hi, I actually just did a paper on the neurology of sexuality, and so all this stuff, I did a lot of the stuff on homosexuality and that kind of stuff as well.
Really?
And yeah, it's actually crazy cool. There are so many different parts of the brain that lead to all of this stuff, like the nucleus accumbens. It's actually, it depends on your sexuality, but it can actually be changed. It's a sexually dimorphic organ in your body, and so that means, like, for men, it's different than female. But if you associate yourself with being female then, and you're actually male, your brain takes over the function of being female.
You know, I'm fascinated by this, and I'm kind of angry at you that you didn't phone earlier, because I would love to talk about this more. Can you do me a favor?
Mm-hmm.
Could you email this to us, and I would love to post it.
I'm in the studio. I'll actually just talk to you when you're done your show.
Whoa.
That's really good.
Is everybody in the studio? Okay.
That's great.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
And we have, I can't actually read my note here, another caller on Paul. Paul, are you there, Paul?
Hello?
Mm-hmm. Well, for God's
sake. I haven't pushed any crazy buttons in the last bit. Paul, are you there? I guess not. I'll try both of these.
Hello?
Well, you know what?
Sorry, do we have lost you? You can try calling back. We can get you on maybe in the next 60 seconds or so.
So if you have a Twitter-like question, if you can ask the question in 140 characters or less, maybe you can speak. Other than that, I did want to say before we leave that next week we'll be talking about UFOs with Jim Maroney, director of the Alberta UFO Study Group. And this is going to be interesting.
I was just kidding.
Did you know that Alberta had a UFO study group? Because I did not.
No.
The wonders of Google.
All hell to Google.
He said that he has a personal experience with UFOs. So this should be mighty interesting, because although I have not seen any scientific basis at all for belief in UFOs, Jim disagrees. So this could be an interesting episode. So do tune in next week. Also, right after we get off the show tonight, we are taking Sean out for birthday drinks. So any listeners at all, do come to Pub 1905 down on Jasper Ave, and Sean will buy you a drink.
Oh, yeah. I'll buy you a drink for my...
No, come buy Sean a birthday drink. And really, if no one sings him happy birthday in like a Marilyn-esque kind of way, I'm going to be very unhappy. Because I don't plan to do this myself.
The last caller we missed, maybe they were trying to sneak it in and we lost out on that opportunity forever.
Then caller, if that was the case, I expect you at Pub 1905.
I will say, I went to dinner last night with my mom, and she didn't feel so compelled to sing in a small group. It was just small get together. So
if your mom singing to you like
no, 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 it was like there was a few of us there, but they didn't want to go into the awkward singing. So I had some candle that had the greeting card sound quality to it that they flipped on, and it just.
Oh, that tinny kind of mechanical scent? That's brilliant. I love it.
So it was her little way of getting out of singing, but bringing some musical joy to the cake, I suppose.
Good job, Mom.
Yeah.
And I think that's all the time we have for today. Thanks very much, Mike, for saving our collective asses. And am I allowed to say asses on air?
Bump up the rating, I guess.
And thanks to Marion, and as always, to the rest of the Skept crew. And we will talk about UFOs next week on the next Skeptically Speaking.
We look forward to seeing you then. And for those birthday drinks.
Subtle.
Yeah, well, you know, always with the subtlety. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
South America does not. Sometimes fall up, but you never see, and everything you believe is a lie.
Dinosaurs were invented.